Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Cosentino here. And I, too, welcome you to Democratic Perspective.
And we're going to let Gary speak today.
We're going to let Gary speak today.
All right. It's the day before the election that has gone on forever.
This is it.
I'm thinking we should have had a second Thanksgiving holiday this year to celebrate the fact the election is going to finally be over tomorrow.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So let's talk about the national election, then we'll talk about Arizona-wide elections, and then we'll talk about the local election. There are a lot of interesting things going on, lots of action.
I want to slip a zero-level thing in here. So we got number one, two, three, four. We got our agenda here. But we want to talk about lies. We want to talk
about... Hello? We have a caller today. No? Not yet.
We want to talk about lies. We're talking about the major theme of the 2016 election is lies. And one of the reasons it's lies, how many of you guys have seen saw the Samantha Bee show? She had the young Russian men on in hoods that told that they're hired by the Russian government to tell lies everywhere on the internet, especially in America, everywhere on make up fake websites and put fake news everywhere. So this is what. So you, when you find that thing that Obama has just eaten 16 cats, or he's giving nuclear fuel to Iran, or he's secretly torturing Jews in the basement of the White House, these are the Russian kids that are been hired by the Russian government to fill the internet with these lies.
It's a major employment opportunity.
An unstable America makes Russia very, very happy. And an unstable America is what you get under Donald Trump. That's what they're after.
Mike, we have a caller in today on the show
before
the election. She's not related to any of us that I know.
All right.
So we have
that's cool.
Hello, Astrid.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nevada.
From Nevada. Oh,
did you vote? Did you vote yet?
You're an activist. Tell folks here in the Verde Valley a little bit about yourself and what do you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, I got involved here in Nevada through activism on immigration reform and have continued to stay very active in all of the politics. And as you mentioned, you know, local politics are very important. And so I've stayed very involved with our local politics. And now that it's such an important national race, you know, being involved as a student, as a young person in this has been very important. And I hope to continue doing the work here. And you know, it's really exciting to see our neighbors in Arizona turning out the vote.
Whose side are you on?
I'm sorry?
Whose side are you on? Let's cut to the chase.
Well, I am a Hillary Clinton supporter. I have been, very vocal about advocating for her and for making sure that we keep our country going to where we really want it to be, which is, without sounding cheesy, which is stronger together through Hillary Clinton.
I like that theme, don't you? Stronger together. It was a real good anti-Trump theme without being hitting people over the head with it.
Exactly. You know, I think that's all that this has been about, that, you know, he has been so divisive, and not just to one community, to so many, and just, you know, making sure that we have the America that we want, the America that we're willing to work for, and I think that's what Hillary Clinton is bringing to the table.
Astrid, you want to go ahead and make history here. You can make a prediction, because if Hillary Clinton takes Nevada, she takes the race. What do you think? Is she going to take Nevada?
You know, I think that the work that has been done will speak for itself, and I know Secretary Clinton won't take Nevada.
That's great. Excellent. That's really, really good news here.
How has the contest been going in Nevada? Has it
I know that Nevada is now one of the battleground states,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's
and that the candidates and their surrogates have been there a lot. What's the demographics now of Nevada? And where do you think the state is headed? Particularly, you have a really important, one of the most important Senate contests in Nevada, a very close one. What's your opinion on that? What's your take on it?
Right. Well, you know, I think one of the biggest things is I am a Latina, and the Latino vote has gone up every single year since 2010. There has been a huge demographic increase here in the state of Nevada of AAPI, African American Latino voters, and they have been doing something that they haven't done in the past, which is early voting. And as of right now, you know, the Democrats have about a 70,000 voter lead, and so I think that we're going to continue holding strong. And you know, Catherine
in early voting, 75% lead in early voting.
Yes.
Wow. Is it just Latinos or across the board? Just
Latinos? No, that's across the board, across the state.
Wow.
And you know, one of the things that has been really incredible has been Catherine Cortez Masto, who has who's in the race to take Senator Reid's Senate seat. And I think one of the powerful things with her is that she would be the first Latina senator in the entire history of our country. And I think that, you know, continues to speak for the importance of not only Latino vote, but AAPI, African-American, anybody who's out there who wants, again, that America that we want to work for. And I think that that's what Nevada has shown. Nevada has really shown that the demographics are moving away from that hatred and divisiveness that Donald Trump really wants to instill.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I'm really, really glad to hear it. The home state of the Bundys is not what the national news projects it to be. It's exactly what you projected it to be. It is diverse. It is a wonderful mixture of a reflection of what America is and has always been, except the media doesn't always get it. I want to make sure that how do you listen to our Democratic Perspective show? What do you catch?
She's referred to us by the Democratic National Committee as someone who we should talk to, have a little bit different voice than we have.
Absolutely.
Someone coming from a different state and someone who's a lot younger than we are.
So what about
if you saw us in the studio, I mean there's three decrepit old guys and talking to someone, you know, in Sedona where we live, if you're 40 or under, you're a young person.
Well, I decided that, as I was sitting outside of Kate's, that whiskey makes your face wrinkled. So, but then the girl next to me, the woman next to me assured me that it was age. That was just because I was old. It had nothing to do with the whiskey. All right, so, okay.
So what have Democrats done in Nevada that you think is has made the case? You've got a good, strong ground game, I take it.
Oh, definitely. I think the ground game has been the most important thing. You know, millions of dollars were poured into Nevada by the Koch brothers. You know, I've lost count at this point. It's so much money to push their agenda that is really goes against our families. But not only, you know, the Democrats, but other organizations that have become involved in it that have been doing, you know, leading up to this, you know, there have been citizenship fairs put on by organizations to help people that are eligible to become citizens do that so that they would be eligible to vote. And so this has not just been something that, you know, somebody woke up last week and said, hey, Nevada's a good state to throw some operatives in there. No, this has been, our community has been working for this. Our community has been involved in every step of the way. And I think that's, you know, I think that's, it's going to be a good example for other states in the future of how important it is to actually, you know, be involved in the community far before the election, but to keep on, you know, basically keep on pushing during the election to make sure that people are turning out. And you know, just on Friday was one of the highest voter early vote days, which was the very last day. And we had a really incredible amount of people turn out to vote one of the Mexican supermarkets, Cárdenas, and it was just incredible to be there and have people come up to us and say, you know, I've been a resident for 40 years, but it wasn't until this election I wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton, or it wasn't until, you know, people were coming up to us and telling us, you know, I'm a citizen and I'd never voted and I'm 40 years old and I brought my son to vote with me.
Wow.
It's just, you know,
wow.
People are really getting involved, and it's been incredible, not only as an activist, but I think just as a human being to see what this has brought, the good that this evil has brought out in people.
I got chills. I got chills listening to Astrid. I'm just so grateful that this has happened. You know, you got people like the ex-governor of Arizona that says stupid things all the time, but she said the most incredibly stupid thing, which we actually have to be grateful for. She said, Latins don't vote. So that's why they were counting on however they're counting on doing in Arizona. And I'm hoping that she gets proved wrong.
I think when I worked with a lot of guys who were just becoming citizens, and one year when I was working in this bar in Manhattan, a very, very, very fancy hotel. And many of the guys were from Bangladesh, and they had all taken their citizen test, and they used to torture me by giving me citizen test questions that I couldn't answer. But there was a real tentativeness about voting, a little bit of I think, fear even of voting, because they came from a country where voting happens, but it's a little bit more iffy. And I know that, you know, they would talk to me about who to vote for and what to do, but there's still a little shyness. So I think people a while to get into to their right to vote in the United States when you're a citizen.
Well,
does happen.
How about the intimidation factor? While you're thinking of that answer, how about the intimidation factor? I think that there is something intimidating for a new voter when there's this level of emotion around an election, that going to the polls is scary, and it's just a lot easier not to vote. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I won't interrupt you.
No. You know, one of the things that I think, you know, you were asking what's been really been helpful and successful is that a lot of times organizations or nonprofits or, you know, whoever, the elections department, they had these voting booths up at certain locations so that people could go learn how to do it. Not, you know, again, not last month, not 2 months ago, 6-7 months ago, so that people could go learn how to use it and that they could feel comfortable with it. Because we have to remember that, again, a lot of these people that are becoming citizens are people of an older age, you know, are people that, again, as I mentioned, have been residents for many, many years and just never decided to take the plunge, whether it was because of the cost of citizenship or fear of that test. And so that was really helpful. You know, we had elderly women, you know, in their 80s, 90s, as incredible as it sounds, and they were going to these classes, and it wasn't really classes, it was just having a voting booth at, you know, a grocery store or something, and standing there with their kids being taught how to do it. Because, again, yeah, people come from countries where, you know, iffy is a really good word that you use. A lot of elections are iffy, and I think that people have just, you know, understood that, you know, these elections are so vital and they're so important, and that, you know, any monkey business that is going to happen in their countries, here it's not going to happen. And I think that's encouraged a lot of people, and I think that's what's made it really exciting to just see so many people that have never voted, you know, because I think sometimes, you know, even as a young person, I take for granted that, you know, somebody may not know how to use a computer, may be intimidated by putting in the voter chip card, you know? People might be intimidated by having to go in and sign in at it. And so it's really important that people learn far ahead how to do it, but also that they're really well informed.
In the Phoenix area, Joe Arpaio, you know, Sheriff Joe, the world's toughest sheriff,
Maricopa County Sheriff,
has announced that he's putting deputies in each of the polling places throughout Maricopa County to prevent any sort of funny business, and there's fears that might given his background, might suppress the Latino vote.
It's an obvious attempt to suppress the Latino vote, period. This would be written up in history.
Do you think it will be effective?
You know, I don't think it'll be effective because I think comments like Dan Brewer's, comments like Donald Trump saying, you know, oh, Latinos aren't voting, or whatever other comments they may have, they're really making people kind of lose that fear. They're making people go out there. And I think it's sad that Sheriff Arpaio is so afraid in his race that he's doing this. We all know what he's going through. It's a pretty uphill battle. But at the same time, we also understand that, you know, Joe Arpaio is doing it publicly in Arizona, but there's other states where, you know, these kind of citizen groups are doing that to go out there and intimidate voters. And I think it's sad. I think it's not what the United States is about. But at the same time, I know that these people that are going to go out and vote are still going to go on and do it because they know that this is the most important race again.
Well, from your mouth to God's ear, I'm hopeful that you are correct.
I'm very hopeful, and I think all the hours canvassing and all the hours phone banking and helping set up rides to the polls, I think all of those things are gonna really pay off. But I think the most important thing is just, you know, people's own feelings about this race, that, you know, this isn't all about Donald Trump is horrible. I think a lot of people, you know, this is a historic race. This is also about the positiveness of, you know, these women. For me, having Catherine Cortez Masto go to the Senate is incredible, because I think, you know, I'm 28. The United States is a little bit older than me, but to think that at my age, I'm going to see the first Latina senator, it just, you know, it's incredible.
We have a woman in Prescott, Jerry, who is
Jerry Emmett.
Who is 102 years old, and made national news for going to the polls last week and casting her. She was born, of course, before women had the right to vote, and so she proudly went to the polls to vote for the first female president.
This may be out of your bailiwick here. If the Senate becomes 50-50, and this is really important. The presidency is one thing, all the focus on the presidency. But we know that without a Democratic Senate, the presidency is limited. Nevada is scheduled to win to 56 points, I guess, but still, I guess, within the margin of error. So Democrats take Pennsylvania. Democrats take Nevada. I want to be quiet here and listen to your answer on whether the Democrats could take Nevada and the Senate, and
I wouldn't believe the quiet part of it.
And the beauty. Yeah, I wouldn't buy it either.
Again, I'm very confident about this. I think the work is being done, and I think if people were sitting at home and kind of hoping, oh, I hope everything goes well, I'd be a little bit more skeptical as to what's going to happen. But I've seen people working day and night to make sure that this is happening. And again, you know, there was lines at voting, and I mean, that sounds incredible. I know other states have had those, but here in Nevada, a line to vote is 15, 20 minutes long. And, you know, Friday there was two, 3 hour long lines to vote. And I think that is really, what I am, I'm seeing. And, you know, I've been involved in politics for almost 7 years now. And that's the first time that I've stood there and that the lines have been that long for early voting. Because, you know, our election department is usually really good at getting people through. And so I'm really excited about that. But at the same time, I really hope that Democrats do take over. And I hope that one of the first things that they do, you know, is that they can appoint a Supreme Court justice so that we can get some of the things that have been kind of on hold going.
Thank you for being with us, and thanks for calling in, and thanks to the National Democratic Party for telling us about you. And I hope things go as well in Nevada as as you see, it's really good to hear that they're young and active people. And for us, you're like almost like a teenager because you're 28.
Well, the Latin vote is the Latin vote. I've been the sleeping giant for so long, and if by this phone call today and some of our chat here before and after. We can hang up with Astrid Silva from Nevada, a Democratic activist. We are going to take some strength and some and heart from the Latino vote, achieving what, or at least getting a lot closer to where we thought it could be.
We really appreciate you calling in and. If we're laughing and joking a lot, it's because it's been a very, very long election for us.
It has been, you know, and I think, you know, you said I'm a teenager to you. You know, I'm inspired. My cousin, she's 11 years old, and she lives in Arizona, and she's been out knocking doors and phone banking, and she registered our great aunts and uncles who had never gone to vote before, and she's 11 years old. So I think that just shows us, you know, what this election really is about when an 11-year-old is getting involved, because she's seeing history being made. And so, you know, that's what it's about. It's about that energy that's out there, and that's what's making me excited about this race. And that it has been very long, but I think we're in the home stretch, and we're all going to make it through.
My Latina daughter is very active in Maricopa County politics, by the way. We do full disclosure here. I look like this anemic white guy, but she's half Mexican, and she has been very active this term, and I'm love her to death, and I'm really, really glad that she's gotten active in politics.
Thanks for calling in, Astrid, and good luck in Nevada. We hear good things about it. I think the most important thing you said, in a way, in terms of just the technical part of it, is the early voter turnout is so high. And you can measure whether people are voting a Democratic or Republican in a way by who they show up as registered. And it's good to see that number of people ahead of time. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mike and Steven. I really appreciate it. And we'll see Tuesday night.
Yes. Maybe we'll talk next week and you can give us a rundown.
Yeah, we'll do it. Great.
I'd be more than happy to. And hopefully it'll be a very celebratory call.
Yes, right. And we won't be joking because we're of election fatigue. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Bye, Esther.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Well, as our election pre-election coverage here, and as Steve said, we whatever you want to call it, you can call it election fatigue, you can call it election hysteria.
It's the nastiest election, Mike.
It's beyond
national level.
It's like
that I've ever seen.
We've had nasty elections, and we've heard of nasty elections in the world, but we're talking banana republic nasty.
Well, you know, a lot of the guys that were becoming citizens came from countries where it's an iffy thing to vote, or where they're whether there are these brutal wars, and it's voting is a little bit a scary process.
Right.
Becoming an American citizen takes a little getting used to, and the fact that you can vote here and have a say in things is not always true in the rest of the world. They may have elections, but those are elections like Saddam Hussein used to have, where he got 98% of the vote, you know, and he would have gotten 100%, except they decided to make it look a little more realistic,
Mike.
Don't you think it's the long voting lines that you mentioned in Nevada, and we've read about in Maricopa and elsewhere across the country, that don't you think that's kind of a two-edged sword, in that it's great that we have this big turnout and these long lines. On the other hand, there is no reason in the richest country on earth that we should have people waiting in line for 5 hours to vote.
There's a very clear reason, Gary. I'm sorry. A very clear reason, and the reason is they don't want them to vote. They know what
statistically, since the Voter Rights Act was sort of undone, by the Supreme Court.
Did you see that number?
A huge number, and it was maybe 800 yes. polling places have closed in the South.
That's right.
This is a deliberate attempt to make force people into line. And I think, what is it? What was the person? The woman was in Indiana. She said, they said, well, why don't we have a polling place at the university? I mean, the place is huge. It's got 100, yeah. well, not 100, but it's got tens of thousands of students. They said, well, there's too many Democrats there, so we don't want to have polling places.
Yeah, at least
There's been a concerted effort to make voting hard.
Right.
And, even the fact it's on Tuesday for a lot of people, and she's talking about early voting, and the reason people do is because not everybody can get off on Tuesday. When I used to work in New York, it was hard sometimes to vote. I'd have to get up really early. There'd be lines because everybody was trying to get to work.
I have to say this. We've seen all over the internet that Obama wants a national holiday, but I have no idea whether it's true. And I'm saying this for two reasons. Number one, because I wish Obama would, in his last months in office, if he could do it, I don't know if he can, declare a national holiday for, or at least get the ball rolling.
For voting, yes.
For voting. There is nothing more important. This Tuesday thing is insane.
Why is it on a Tuesday?
And
Do you not know?
Yeah, tell me, Gary. I think I read something.
It's because of farming. When the country is founded, I grew up on a farm, but it was because they didn't want to have it on the weekend, because it took 2 days to travel to the polling place and a day to travel back. So they didn't want to have it on a Saturday. On Sunday was church day, so you couldn't have people traveling for that. So on Monday, they could travel to the polls and vote on Tuesday and then travel back home and go back to work on the farm. So
all been modernized.
It's a relic. Well, we have, back then it was the farmers were the vast majority of the population percentage-wise, and now it's, 5%.
Yeah, less 3%.
Are we talking about America or Iowa, Gary?
Yeah, right. Well, time.
All right, let's get serious. I'm gonna hit you guys with some questions. Right, let's talk about the national race first.
Okay.
This weird stuff with the FBI. First there's vital new information, then there's not vital new information happening right before the election. Violation of unwritten rules that you don't mess around with. In other words, if you're the press and you have an October surprise, that's fine. But the government's not supposed to be doing October surprises about, particularly about these kind of issues, right?
I think the Hatch Act is clearly written. I think the FBI director should go to jail or at least defend himself in court. So I disagree that it's unclear. I think it's clearly written. He knows what he did is illegal. At the very least, his backtracking, which he's done in the last 24 hours, which you can't look at, you can't walk by a computer without social media talking to you about how Hillary Clinton has been cleared of every possible email infraction there ever was, and the FBI director is behind that. He's saying, no, we went through, and then, of course, there's the people on the internet saying, you couldn't go through all 60,000 emails, and he's saying, you know what? Edward Snowden twittered from, his hole in Russia and said, an ancient laptop could do it in a few minutes to a few hours, could go through 61 million.
If you've got the right logarithm, you can pull out all the things.
Exactly.
And the thing about the whole thing with Hillary and I don't know what to say about it except that
It was
there was never much it chance that anything could be hidden, right, Gary? I mean, because even if she's using a private email address, the minute she sends it to anyone in the government and it hits a government email address, there's a copy of it. There's nothing being hidden. The only way you could hide something is if you used a private email address and you send it to another person's private email address. Otherwise, it'd be a copy of it. You can't destroy it. All this talk about she can erase you can't destroy government any emails to the government because they're all recorded, multiple times.
This just shows the politics of personal destruction. It's almost impossible to disprove a negative. If somebody makes an accusation about a candidate, and a few people, just a few people, believe it, it's going to grow and snowball, and it's you know, if you, how do you disprove that you're not a liar? I mean, you know, it's we have PolitiFact and all these fact-checking organizations that have shown that Hillary was the most truthful presidential candidate in this entire race going back to last year, and yet people think that she can't be trusted. And at the same time, these fact-checking organizations have shown that Trump lies on average about every 2 to 3 minutes of his speeches. And I mean, they're blatant, bald, you know, bald-faced lies.
They don't believe it. Trumpsters don't believe PolitiFact. They don't believe they think they're all tools of the left.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the Toronto Star did a wonderful two-page editorial, you know, listing, I think it was 900 and some lies from, you know, said by Trump. You know, one of the reporters had been tracking it throughout the campaign. And it was something the American media should have done.
Well, it's kind of like the show. New York Times did it. It's kind of like the show. They want it on the record. Things are moving too fast. We're too getting to the election too quickly. But they want it on the record. They want history to show that this is what happened.
Well, I think what my question would be is Hillary Clinton violated a State Department rule to do all her formal business on the State Department server. And Powell had done the same thing before her.
It's
very, very inconvenient. Bad thing that she did?
What you just said is not true. She did not do her formal business on an email. The emails were simply to converse with her staff. All diplomatic business with the State Department is done by diplomatic pouches, by wire, secure wire, and by secure phone conversations. Most of it, all of it.
No, not really, Gary. There's classified.
You've bought into the propaganda.
No,
I'm sorry.
I haven't. There is a rule, and it didn't apply just to Hillary Clinton. It applies to everybody in the government that, or almost everybody, that you have to have a separate cell phone, a separate setup for formal governmental email. You have to carry a separate phone. That's the thing. And what happened is that she didn't do it. Powell didn't do it because it's extremely inconvenient. And she didn't try to I think the only criticism I have, she didn't try to change the rules so everybody, I mean, in other words, you can't use your private phone to dial into the State Department numbers or addresses. And she didn't, instead of reforming this very inconvenient and no longer functional thing, she just ignored it. That's her crime.
She tried, when Obama was elected, he wanted to keep carrying his BlackBerry, so he had a single device. The NSA said, no, that's not possible. And if you know anything about our federal government, you know it's computer challenged. It's technologically challenged. They don't invest the money in technical infrastructure that's necessary. And so they made an exception for him. They worked around to give him a single device. When Hillary was appointed Secretary of State, because she was going to be traveling all over the world constantly, she asked for the same thing. The NSA denied it to her. So she did what her predecessor did, you know, Colin Powell, and decided to use personal email.
All right. This gets equivalent to all of Trump's lies, misinformation. How does that become it? Gary and I differ a little bit. I think she did something slightly wrong in violation
a
departmental directive.
Well, she did something that was against agency policy, it was not illegal.
No.
And it was not, as the Republicans have implied, it was not diplomatic business conducted on email. That is all done by other means. This was simply conversations with her staff and low-level people.
I cannot stress strongly enough, because nobody can adjust to it, and eventually we're going to have to, that there is nothing, there is so little that you can trust. information, lies. The since Karl Rove, since 2000, since the 1998, since the ascension of George W. Bush as a possible candidate, and Karl Rove and all of the other, they find that lying works so well. Donald Trump raised it to a fine art, knowing that we cannot react fast enough, knowing he knows, they, whoever, he, his handlers, knows the media better than we do. Tell the lie. Tell the biggest lie, the most lies you can, number and quantity. It takes supposedly people with integrity and a little honesty so long to sort it out, it doesn't matter. By the time they sort it out, the lie will have done most of its damage or most of its effect, most of its impact. And,
well, he just repeats them over and over again.
For a long time, you had the echo chamber. The echo chamber is trying not to do that anymore. It's just the way the media works. I mean, once again, my small-town journalism skills, you go where the story is. The story is by far Donald Trump. That's where all the madness is. That's where all the whack jobs, all the interest is there. The lies, the fact that he tells lies, not my job to point out.
Well, I don't think people care. I think he's in some ways when, you know, here he is, he's a billionaire. He started out his business with a different amount
of money. I think that's
money.
A lie.
Yeah. Started out one of the wealthiest families in New York real estate industry. He lives in a mansion on Fifth Avenue. Yet people identify with that he's the truth teller because they think he says a lot of things they want to say about immigrants. They don't
like
him.
He spends more on his ties than most Verde Valley families feed their families within a year.
Yeah, and but why do so many people see him as a truth teller when as I think Gary would say, if you look at the guys who check things that happen to just not be true, he is like the champion, all-time world liar in American politics.
He is. And one of the problems, I think Mike, you know, started to hit on it, one of the problems is the echo chamber is that when you tell a lie, let's say about Benghazi or about the emails, and you tell the lie and you know, nobody really understands it or takes the time or has the time to understand it. But Fox News Channel and all of their pundits start picking up on this lie and repeating it and adding to it. And then you get Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levine, Alex Jones, all of these right-wing radio hosts that repeat it over and over again.
Also and politicians,
And Breitbart on the web and all of the right-wing websites. And if they constantly repeat all of this and the people, the listeners, viewers, and readers take that as their news and information source without ever cross-checking it against another source, they're going to believe the lie. And the lie gets rolling. It starts snowballing. And how do you disprove a negative? You can't. It's, you know, I could say that something horrible about you, Steve.
Well,
that
I didn't say really bad things
that
about
is a
you,
complete,
Gary,
yeah. complete lie. And
Gary
I could
has horns, folks. I know you can't see. And he looks like Charles de Gaulle with horns.
And I could repeat it endlessly on these shows and elsewhere on my blog, et cetera. And how do you...
What's your blog's address, Gary, while we're on that?
LeMastersCorner.com.
And you have, thousands of people coming onto your blog? And
I have about 11,000 users.
This is his secret life, folks, when he's not on the radio. He's blogging day and night. Repeat the title again. Folks, check it out. It's a great blog.
It's LeMastersCorner.com.
And we do want to remind people that you can listen to Democratic Perspective all different places on the internet. Please look for us on the internet. Radio. We were making some jokes earlier about people not having, I don't have a radio. And that's true. Certainly millennials and a lot of older people don't have radios anymore. Well, you don't need one if you want to listen to the Democratic Perspective. We are, I hesitate to say, all over the internet. But
and we're all over the world. We have listeners all over the world, but they're all on podcasts.
You can do podcasts, and I believe you can find us live.
Yeah. predictions for the race. Let's talk a little bit about local politics. We've been talking about national politics.
First, can I make an announcement?
No announcements, Gary.
Our one of our sponsors, Democrats of the Red Rocks, is having the Democratic Victory Party.
Hopefully
victory is the operative word. Tomorrow night at 7:30, beginning at 7:30 at Java Love on 89A in West Sedona, 2155 State Route 89A, Suite 118.
These parties, and I've been to a number of them, are a lot of fun, unless you're losing terribly badly and you got a lot of morose people. But I think it's gonna be fine nationally. What about the local contest?
Nikki Bagley, Nikki Check. I'm just saying your name over and over. As opposed to Civilly Allen. The latest thing that I saw was an article in the paper or something about Nikki Bagley's opponent in the Senate, the Arizona Senate, has sent out some blatant lies about her, which is another thing that this is how far down you figure an Arizona Senate race not exactly being national headlines. But
Sevilla is in some trouble for the first time, so out come the...
Well, and she's lying. She's not lying for the first time, but she's certainly lying about Nikki Bagley, who is by far... better candidate.
She and her compatriots, Bob Thorpe and Brenda Barton, advertised together, and for years they've advertised themselves as the jobs and education team,
which they have nothing to do with.
They have not,
a single job.
They have not sponsored a single jobs bill or a single education bill in all of their terms in the legislature.
But Gary, we didn't get the jobs because we didn't allow that nuclear dump. That would have created jobs. Having a nuclear waste would have been a great job.
You know what I'm hearing from a lot of millennials and pre-millennials is that they didn't teach them this stuff in school. They have no idea how many senators Arizona has. They have no idea what a Senate House is, and so they don't know how state government works.
Mike,
I took a class in state government because I'm so stinking old. But they wish somebody. So Gary just mentioned the two House representatives from LD6, our legislative district. That's the other thing they don't understand. What do you mean legislative district? Well, who decides where one district ends?
I think that's
a
great point.
And all of these things. So, and what happens is they stop their thinking. They stop their political thinking. I'm talking about 25, 30-year-olds who I've talked to in the last 72 hours. They're saying, once I get to this sort of confusion, legislative district, who decides the district? Now, is this just some other Republican thing that I have to worry about?
But the sad thing is that naturalized citizens, immigrants, the way our government works than people that were born here.
These guys used to torture me with the citizenship test, you know, just to make sure. And I know I follow politics, or I was pretty good at answering their questions. But they're torturing me because they have been forced to learn a lot of this stuff. And you know, civics was probably the most boring thing I ever took in high school, but at least I learned how the United States government was structured.
Well, a lot of it depended, like everything else, depends on the instructor.
So next week, we're going to talk about the election results, right, Mike?
What else? Because of the impact on the Supreme Court? We're talking about changing lives for several generations here.
Next week, we're going to have a serious analysis.
That's why the Republicans are digging in. They'd rather not. They see a split court because they know that life is going to become reasonable for the rest of us. And Republicans, once again, will be kicked to the lunatic fringe where they belong.
We have hundreds of federal judge vacancies across the country, and they have not approved them. They've not approved Merrick Garland, and now they're saying already that they won't approve any of Hillary's
I think if we see a Hillary Clinton victory tomorrow, what we really need to face is what the Republican response to this speech. Donald Trump has said he wouldn't accept the results of the election. Sometimes he says that, sometimes not. I think that's what we have to think about, of where we are with as Gary is saying, with the Senate, with the House, with the Supreme Court justices as a result of this election. This is one of the major elections of this century, which is easy to say because the century's not very long yet.
Well, this in any century. I'm sorry. This, you have to go back a long way. Democratic Perspective, by the way, is located at vvid.org. Please see our podcast. This show and all our shows are on vvid.org.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.